Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to Jump in Tucson. I am your host, Grant Kruger. I am very excited to be here with you this sunny Wednesday, July 3rd, a day before America's birthday over here. Certainly one of the slower weeks in the old Pueblo, right? This one happens to sort of be Tucson's Ramadan, an area of the season where a lot of people hightail it out of town, and you might find a little less traffic in your local bars and restaurants. Actually, it's a great time to go snag a table at a really highly demanded place. You could sneak right into Vivace. You could probably walk right into Wildflower without a reservation. There are so many places you could go check out this week if you happen to be hanging in the old Pueblo like myself. Not a whole lot of restaurant openings going on this week. In short bit of restaurant news on Food for Thought, we do have an opening of Fat Boy Sandoz, a former food truck and former or soon to be former resident of the American Eat Company, is building their own restaurant in Park Mall. And if you remember from a few months ago, we had Patrick McCauley, the owner of Squared Up Pizza from Park Mall, and talked a lot about the challenges that are existing in opening up a mall, inside a mall, and the foot traffic of malls in Tucson. And so we wish those guys an awful lot of success as they start to move on from food truck to American Eat Company Food Incubator into their own first brick and mortar over here. That's looking to open as soon as July 24th, so do keep an eye out for that one. As well, we've got an opening of the Chocolate Iguana on the northwest side of town, a former resident of 4th Avenue, and on their way a little further north, basically at the corner of Ina and La Cholla, across from the former site of the Foothills Mall, which is now going to be rebranded as Uptown and is currently under a massive, massive amount of construction. On political news, today is July 3rd. The ballot initiatives, i.e. signature collecting, for things that might end up on our ballot in November is due today. There are over 14 ballot initiatives filed. At least three have a strong chance of making that particular ballot. They will have to submit at least 255,000 signatures each to the Secretary of State office today by 5 p.m. The one that we're paying most attention to is, of course, the One Fair Wage or Raise the Wage AZ Act that's looking to raise Arizona's minimum wage up to $18 an hour, which would be quite devastating for the restaurant business. And so do keep an eye out for that one. Next week, I'm filling in for Ted Maxwell on the Engagement Hour on Tuesday, July 9th. We're going to do a whole show about tipping, talk about the Tipped Worker Protection Act, which will be on your ballot, the potential of Raise the Wage AZ from being on your ballot, because I think we'll know the answer by then. I'm going to bring on a few employees, perhaps some people from the Arizona Restaurant Association. We're going to talk all about tips, a little episode we're calling Just the Tip over here, and you'll be able to air your grievances about the tipping process. That is next Tuesday, July 9th on Jump in Tucson. But as we get into America's birthday over here, I wanted to talk about the most American food I could think of, and that is the hamburger, right? Like, maybe we're known as the America's best Mexican food, but we've also got a lot of great hamburgers here in Tucson, Arizona. The history of the hamburger goes back a little over 100 years, and there's a lot of debate about where hamburgers come from and where the genesis of this most American dish comes from. Quite frankly, the Russians are probably the group, believe it or not, to take the most credit for the genesis of the hamburger from steak tartare. Utilizing chopped bits of steak, egg, and breadcrumbs, they would bring it over to Hamburg, Germany, which was noted as the sort of landing point in the shore for Russian meats to make its way into the rest of the European continent. As German immigrants began to move into the United States after a major German basically revolution problem in 1849, they brought with them this Hamburg style steak, which was seasoned raw meat with eggs and breadcrumbs, and they brought that to the United States. It was actually advertised at that time as something that might help with digestive issues. Even raw meat chopped up with these things was given to people for digestive issues, and studies were done in 1867 by a New York doctor named James Salisbury. You might recognize that last name as the inventor of the Salisbury steak. In 1867, he began to cook up those pieces of raw meat and serve them as a steak dish. Now, A number of restaurants have taken claim to the first full-service restaurant to serve a hamburger. It's most likely Delmonico's restaurant in New York, I would say, doing the research that I've done on this one, to take credit as the full-service restaurant. But the truth is, hamburgers came about from food carts, and I wouldn't even say food trucks because trucks didn't exist back then, but a number of food fairs. The Menchez brothers from Akron, Ohio, take some claim as early as 1885, selling pork sausages at a factory, at a food festival in Akron, Ohio, where they ran out of pork sausages and began to put beef on a bun. And so Akron, Ohio takes some credit for the hamburger. There's a gentleman named Charlie Negrin, known as Hamburger Charlie, from Seymour, Wisconsin, that was also selling meatballs at a food festival in 1885 that claimed that guests weren't buying his meatballs because they couldn't carry them with them at this festival. And so he began to sandwich them between two pieces of bread. But he's not the only city to take claim to hamburgers. Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Oscar Bilby take credit for the hamburger bun and the creation of an actual piece of bread designed to hold this delicious meat patty, and they go back as early as 1891. Now, if you believe the U.S. Library of Congress, they're going to tell you that New Haven, Connecticut is the genesis of the hamburger, and that Louis Lassen created the first hamburger that they could track back, again, related to a food festival. And then finally, the hamburger takes really big center stage in the United States in 1904. Fletcher Davis began to serve hamburgers at the World Fair in St. Louis in 1904. Fletcher hails from Austin, Texas. And so you've basically got five cities in the United States: Akron, Ohio, Seymour, Wisconsin, Tulsa, Oklahoma, New Haven, Connecticut, and Austin, Texas, all taking credit for the creation of the hamburger. Now, ultimately, the hamburger makes its way into fast food in our culture with White Castle, believe it or not, in the 1920s. Started to create a quick cook hamburger in a very hygienic looking building. The white tiles of White Castle came after Upton St. Clair's book, The Jungle, in 1906, that happened to talk about all of the maladies and bad practices in the meat industry. And so White Castle came out to show you how awesome and clean they can be. And so when we come back after the break, we're going to talk about Tucson's hamburgers, the history of hamburger restaurants in Tucson. I happen to have a very famous, well-known restaurateur coming up after the break, and that's going to be Lindy Riley from Thunder Bacon Burger Company. Coming up after the break, don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger on Jump In Tucson, 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Mac Tucson, thanks for spending part of your day listening to us here on Jump In Tucson. I am your host, Grant Kruger, and I am joined live in studio with Lindy Riley from Thunder Bacon Burger Company. Good morning, Lindy.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for joining us on Jump In Tucson. I couldn't possibly have a conversation about burgers without including one of the most famed burger chefs in all of the land.
I don't know about famous. I just like what I do.
Hey, so before the break, we were talking about the history of the hamburger and its genesis, and we were going to kind of tie this into Tucson, Arizona a bit. Cheeseburgers didn't even make their way into our lexicon until about 1935, if I understand.
Yeah, actually, it's something that I don't think really kind of, it was around, but really didn't, step up and become a thing.
So. And French fries didn't make their way into our culture until starting in the mid-1940s. And it really wasn't until the 1960s when the process of being able to freeze French fries with a number of ingredients to both like sort of emulsify this ground potato and keep it together, but also keep it safe so that you wouldn't hurt people with bacteria.
Yes, and so begins the ever battle of, do you do fresh French fries or do you bring in a frozen product?
Absolutely. It's certainly a hot topic over there. But we're talking burgers in Tucson. Why don't you give our listeners a little rundown about how you got your start in the restaurant business?
So my very first restaurant job was the Big A. And they resided in what is currently the very first Trident. And that was the series. Their son Brian ran it. And that was my introduction to first summer job and rocking hamburgers. And, you know, I started out as a disher. But
I was going to say back of house, yeah, or front of house over here?
Yeah, definitely. I have skills in front of the house. I probably swear too much.
Understood. So open kitchens are not part of the design here of Thunder Bacon.
But that was just that was fantastic. I loved it. I fell in love with it.
So where'd you go? Where'd you go from the Big A after that?
So Big A after that was just really school, and I think my next real dive into kitchens was with Justin Stewart. And he talked me into Bennigan's, so long ago, was doing an opening, and he was like, go in there, you know, ground up, look how it, you know, how it's done, and, you know, start in pantry. I ended up learning everything, including a bunch of management. And then I ended up going to City Grill with him. He was where he was. A sous chef over there.
Of course, Metro Restaurant Corporation. We've certainly had a number of talks about Bob McMahon and the influential history of Metro restaurants in the 520.
Yes, yeah. And there's actually a stint right after high school. I actually moved to San Diego. So, and just kind of went around to a few kitchens there. That was actually kind of fun. I was mainly on the beach a lot.
So how did you get to Lindy's on 4th Avenue, your first restaurant over here?
I was working at Chase Lounge, and a lot of the first menu that came out of there were just things that we all kind of had, I guess, times where we just sit and drink and cook at my house. And a lot of it just spawned from the way I used to cook for all my friends, and just things that I wanted to see. So really, some of the first menu were just, it was just me. This is what I like to eat, so you have to eat it too.
Very so. Nice. The genesis of many a good dish in the restaurant business, for sure.
So I just thought that there was like a void of late night, and really thought it was something that I could do. And I just took my first, you know, $15,000 and jumped in. So it was quite the learning experience first couple of years, and then it took off. So I really wanted to do something. There were a couple hot dog carts at that time, and we'd close up the bar, and it was amazing. But I wanted more. So, and we couldn't always go down to the grill.
So. Understood. the grill.
Yeah.
A late night bowl of Captain Crunch, truly a James Beard award winning delicacy over there when I think of the grill.
I got asked to leave because I brought in ranch for my tater tots. So I'm glad that they were staunch about that. That was funny and awesome.
So Lindy's right off the bat was a success on the Avenue, drew big crowds. Like what can you attribute to the success of Lindy's? Like what are the ingredients that make up a great hamburger to you?
So it's funny considering what I was doing then and what I'm doing now. But for me, it's just the build of the burger. It's got to go into, you know, the bun and the patty, and then all the ingredients need to work. You just, you know, sometimes if you're just piling too much on there, then what's the point? So, you know, I've seen things with like four or five, you know, toppings with three sauces or four cheeses, and it all could work if it's, you know, done, for lack of better words, correctly. So it's just built right. And it's got to be that bite. So, and, you know, you want to go with like a more of a store-bought bun than, you know, that I feel like this should feel more like a backyard barbecue, you know, having fun with your friends kind of burger, which is actually the original Lindy's type of burger that was. So I feel like the connection was that was like, oh, wow, this is, you know, what I, you know, eat with my friends, but on a different level. So, and then from there, I've just kind of learned more. I'm more of a, what I call a bottom build burger person. I don't like, I don't think stacking, you know, huge wings of lettuce and all this tomato and everything to give it height is something that I don't like to see on burgers. I take all that off, and then I feel bad because I feel like I wasted their food cost because it's on the plate. I just like very simple ingredients. I'm kind of a no tomato person. So, which
For those grilling up burgers tomorrow on the 4th of July, a day very, you know, fit for a celebration, most American, and barbecuing and grilling and some fireworks, maybe an adult beverage or two. What kind of beef do you like for your burgers over at Lindy? And what do you think the average home chef should buy to cook a burger?
So we use, at Thunder Bacon, we use Vera Amari. So, or no, I'm sorry, Vera Earl. I'm thinking about pizza.
Yeah. I was going to say, the Musmans will be very happy to hear about you're using Vera Amore at Thunder Bacon.
Hey, there. Guys, you just got bought a ranch. they're an aged Angus beef with a short rib and a whole round, and it's a whole other type. We're the only burger place that's using them right now. It's amazing.
What sort of fat content do you like in the burger?
So it really depends on what you're going for. You want to go for that like crazy crusty amazing smash patty, you know, a 7327. It's fast.
Ooh, that's a fatty burger. Yeah, right there. 7327. You're not messing around.
Yeah, I mean, that's like bun toasted, ready to go, and you know, use American cheese, and you're gonna flip that fast. You're gonna get that burger done in like less than 3 minutes. So, I personally use 8119 at the restaurant, and it's really just kind of what you want. So, you want that crispy crust, you got to go fatty. So, I don't use it in the restaurant. It's a little too fast. There's more room for error or something like that. So definitely you need a flat griddle. So
understood.
Throwing something like that on a grill.
Well, certainly, you know, cooking burgers to temp is actually no easy feat in the restaurant business. I think this is something that a lot of guests don't understand, because part of the success of our business is serving everybody at the table simultaneously, right?
Right.
And so we may be able to cook that burger, this perfect medium rare plus for you, in just the way you want it. But as it rests and sets up, or perhaps sits under a heat lamp for a couple of extra moments, waiting for somebody's, say, omelet or steak or salad or other dish to be prepared, that burger can continue to cook. And all of a sudden, you've missed a temperature by a degree or two.
That, or if you get a table of five and then somebody's the very well done, you just screwed up everybody else's temp.
Uh-oh. A stab at the well done over here. Shots fired by Lindy, Lyndon Riley, owner of Thunder Bacon Cheeseburgers over here.
I mean, honestly, it's when I did do temps, if something like that came in, all the other burgers went last. That was the very first burger to go down. It went well done. It was the one that waited the longest, so it got built first. So, because if you're eating well done, you know, it's as long as it's hot and doesn't have any real flavor, I guess you're okay. So
another shot out there. But it is safe to say that, you know, the insider tip of ordering those well done steaks in the restaurant tend to leave you on the end cuts or the slightly less desirable cuts that once cooked a well done, there won't really be a difference either way. And so it is something to think about.
Oh, very true. So, and honestly, just why the burgers we do right now are they're a lot quicker. Personally, I prefer, you know, smash. I do like a good thick pub style burger, but it's, you know, there's no temping smash burger. So it's just it's in and out.
Sure. Well, so there's a lot of restaurants these days that are like pink or not pink, and those are your options, and they don't even want to play the games of rare, medium, medium well, and well.
Right. Well, I mean, I've literally had somebody walk back in the kitchen and chastise me for, you know, a medium well burger, which is a very nice, you know, thin ribbon of pink in the middle, and just accuse me of trying to kill them with a completely raw burger. And you want your burger blue, I can do that. It's a whole different ball game.
So they've walked back to the kitchen, like inside of Thunder Bacon Burger Company?
Not Thunder Bacon, but yes, they walked into the kitchen. So, which is everybody out there, that's dangerous. Some of us are not as well adjusted.
There are hot and sharp things back there, last time I've heard.
Yeah. Be ready to be escorted out. nicely.
Without a doubt. Well, when we come back after the break, we're going to continue with Lindy on his meteoric rise in the Tucson burger scene, how he ends up getting to Thunder Bacon Burger Company downtown. We're going to talk about our favorite burger restaurants here in Tucson. We'll take a couple calls, too, if you guys got your own opinions on what your best burger is in Tucson. That's going to be 520-790-2040. That's 790-2040 for our call online on Jump in Tucson. We'll be right back after the break with Lindy Riley and Grant Kruger here on Jump in Tucson, 10:30 a.m., your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson and a happy 248th birthday, America. I am your host, Grant Kruger, and we are joined live in studio by Chef Lindy Riley of Thunder Bacon Burger Company. We are talking all things hamburger today on the America's Birthday Eve. Good morning, Chef.
Morning. How are you?
Well, welcome back. Hey, so we were talking Lindy's and your first restaurant on the Avenue. That is 4th Avenue, a very vibrant location in Tucson. How many years did you have that location?
The 4th Ave, I do believe it's still open. I left the concept 8 years ago. And then I guess they tried to do the east side, and fortunately that wasn't successful. But It's
you know. A complicated family situation. Yeah. Over there, indeed. I understand that the restaurant business on a good day is complicated, but mixing it with family can be entirely difficult. And you left that one to start your own company.
This time around, I was at Canyon Ranch for a little bit, Red Desert Barbecue for a little bit before he decided to. You know, sometimes restaurant business just kind of beats you up, and I think it was just better for him and the family and the health, and they ended up closing that. And I talked to my daughter. My oldest daughter is my business partner in Thunder Bacon.
I love it.
And I said, I brought my wife in on it, and I said, I think I want to do it again. And I do believe there was a cuss word in there. And an oh God.
We're on live radio over here, sir, so I advise you to be careful. Matt Neely is sitting there with the delay and mute button as we speak.
Yeah. Thunder Bacon was a gamer tag. So when I had time, so sometimes you were getting a headshot by Thunder Bacon. So we were kicking around names, and that one. It's fun. I love it.
It's punchy.
So, yeah. You know, it's unexpected. So, from there we started on 4th Avenue. I love that building. Downtown ended up, kind of being, a better fit for us. And, now everybody's in the restaurant. My son cooks on the line. My youngest daughter just started serving with us this summer for a summer job, and my 11-year-old granddaughter, who stays the weekends with us, will come in and take tables on Sundays. She knows how to even run the POS better than I do, actually.
Wow.
So,
it is truly a family affair over there at Thunder Bacon.
There are Sundays where we have 3 generations in there. So
that's so cool. I love that.
I love it. I love it a lot. So it's been a lot of fun. So
tell me about downtown a little bit. We talk a lot on this show about Rio Nuevo and its outsized influence on restaurants in the downtown area. Have you worked with Rio Nuevo?
I have worked with Rio Nuevo. Our last remodel, we did the remodel, and then it was kind of a cart before the horse. Usually do a presentation to them. Somebody was like, hey, you should go talk to them about that. And we were able to present to them, and we needed a sign still, and a couple like finer tweaks to the remodel that we had already done. And they came in and helped us out. It was a really cool process. So, and they are definitely, and there are a lot of things going on downtown. You know, a lot of bars and restaurants are down there, but it's also about generating revenue, and they seem to draw a lot, but there are things coming that are going to support all of the bars and restaurants down there here in the future that are being built. And I think it's an amazing downtown area, you know, and going down to the annex, and, you know, it's cool. I think they've done a lot to revitalize a a downtown area that nobody wanted to go to a few years ago.
No, without a doubt. There would not be nearly as many food service establishments downtown if it was not for the tax increment financing district that is Rio Nuevo. And I think their help to the downtown Tucson scene is outsized and incredibly important. It's safe to say that it was a positive experience for you then.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, it was... There's also like people that are in the restaurant industry that are on the board, just having conversations with them and just their overall experience. So they lend a lot more than just money. So it was a learning experience for sure.
And so you're one of the few that's had a restaurant, multiple restaurants, I guess, on 4th Avenue and downtown right now. Can you tell me about the difference between 4th Avenue and downtown?
So downtown, I have, I guess, the same eclectic crowd. We get families, you know, we have business people for lunch. There's still like, you know, the bar crowd that comes out a little later at night. I would say 4th Avenue is definitely more college heavy. The students, we have students that come, but most of our students actually order online from us. I'd say that was the biggest difference between the two.
What sort of percentage of your business is to go right now?
Kind of depends on the week. 2 weeks ago, it was almost 30%.
Wow, that's a pretty high number.
It was huge. We had a huge week to go. I'd say it's probably hanging around, you know, maybe like 15% right now. So,
what, if anything, do you think we can do to make hamburgers travel to go a little better? Like, one of the downsides of the Uber Eats, Postmates, DoorDash sort of model is that certain foods just don't travel all that well, right? Most famously, you order a fish and chips, and it might be delicious when it comes, you know, right from that fryer onto your plate in a full-service restaurant. But when it gets to hang out in the back of a to-go box in the back of someone's Camry for 27 minutes, it can be a little off-putting. And so burgers, unfortunately, sort of have that same stigma. Do you think there's anything we can do about that as an industry?
So French fries, tater tots, you know, onion rings, steam is, you know, you want to put them in that box or container hot. So it's either going to go cold because you put, you know, too much air and let it all out, or you try to seal in all that and they, you know, they don't travel well. So that will always, to me, be the end all be all, like, you figure that one out. And
oh no, there's a Nobel Peace Prize for the individual burgers, that makes a burger travel well.
Burger traveling well for me is about the bun. Our bun is very specific. It took this recipe that I have that I'm doing with Cafe Francois is very specific to us, and it is the culmination of hundreds of buns I've gone through and discarded and over, you know, 20 years, and our bun travels.
That's amazing.
It doesn't fall apart. It stays soft. You can put it in the fridge and get it the next morning, and it is still soft, and it doesn't crumble apart.
Wow. Well, I won't ask you for the secret recipe that way on your bun, as that sounds like a pretty proprietary thing, but that is a pretty amazing development to go through so many different products to find something that is the absolute right fit for you.
I just knew I was going to go with a baker for something like this. It wasn't something I was going to order from, like, Shamrock or, you know, not to say they don't have good product. I just knew that what I wanted this time around for my product wasn't going to be found already being made. So, not that I'd seen.
And so, how many years have you been in business now in Thunder Bacon?
Thunder Bacon, we will hit our 3-year anniversary this October. So,
yeah. Amazing. You're getting through those first 5 years or so, which is what they always say, right? Yeah. That 80% of restaurants don't make it in that first 5-year window.
Yeah, the attrition rate is horrible.
I'd suggest that if you made it through the first even 3, you're probably on a pretty good path over here, particularly the last 3. I mean, there's been a lot of challenges. You know, what sort of challenges have you had operating downtown?
So downtown was just the move. And a lot of people are still finding us, but our numbers are, you know, way above what they were on 4th Avenue. And my biggest challenge, other than labor, you know, which is always a challenge, so it doesn't matter what they're getting paid, you just got to make sure you're hitting your numbers, has been the fluctuation of food in general. So I used to do like a full menu cost out quarterly. I now have a program and I look at it weekly.
Without a doubt, we use Restaurant 365, which is a very expensive and extensive software program to give us our food cost weekly as well, too. And you almost have to do that in the industry now because food prices are moving like the stock market. Sometimes things like avocados move up and down like oil futures, and yet you've got this set price on your menu, and you could really get yourself in trouble if you're not paying attention to that.
Yeah, the fluctuation of even just beef has just been, you know, there are some constants in there, like my bun and stuff that that help. But, fries and tots. When I was paying for tots a few years ago, what I'm paying now is criminal.
We could have a whole show about the tot market, I think, and the various fluctuations.
Somebody is making a lot of money.
Without a doubt, a complicated food market indeed. Well, I don't want you guys to go anywhere. We're going to take one more quick break over here. We've got one more segment coming up with Lindy Riley on Jump in Tucson. We're going to talk about our favorite local burger restaurants in Tucson that are not our own over here.
And
happy to hear a few of yours, too, if you're listening and want to call in. That's 790-2040. You're listening to Lindy Riley from Thunder Bacon Burger Company and Grant Kruger on Jump in Tucson, 10:30 a.m., your home for local news and talk. Thanks for jumping back in with us, Tucson, Arizona. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Jump in Tucson. We are joined live by Chef Lindy Riley of Thunder Bacon Cheeseburger, and we're talking burgers today, right? It's July 3rd. A whole lot of Tucson's got the day off tomorrow. I bet restaurants and bars might be a little bit busier tonight. But tell me, Lindy, about some of your favorite burger restaurants in Tucson that are not ours or yours. Where would you be going to take your family for a nice burger?
Well, just around the corner from us is Divine Bovine. So I love what Benjamin's doing there. I haven't had a chance to get there in a while, but I love Amigos. Their burgers are nostalgic to me, so they're really good. There are some places that, that do, even Rolly's has a really good, the Bedia burger, like they do is really good.
So, that's an interesting point you bring up there, that a burger from a Mexican restaurant, right? There are very few restaurant menus in Tucson that don't have a burger on it. You can go to El Charo and there's a Charo Burguesa on that menu in a Mexican restaurant.
Right. I mean, Charo Steak, that burger's a sleeper, so it's good. Parrish, they have an excellent burger, you know. And then there's Bo Burger, or so they're all vegetarian,
right? They do a number of vegan patties and whatnot now, and
it's good, you know. And I'm a meat eater, but I'll eat vegetarian if it's good, and it's good. So
do you have a plant-based burger then at Thunder Bacon right now?
We do.
Okay. Where does that patty come from?
I make it there. So I bring in some ingredients and then just kind of make my own patty. So it was with those, we actually ball them up and we smash them out as well. So it's the same experiences as the other meat burgers. So it's a little more difficult. So,
oh yeah. As somebody
smashing
that is
a veggie patty, but we do it.
No, we've been using for years, actually, just the Impossible Burger. We used to make our own, but the consistency problems you have with it is no joke. Like, it's a really difficult product to work with house-made meat alternatives as opposed to a prefabricated product.
Right. And actually I do it like a black bean. I'm more a route of the earlier versions of veggie patties. The Impossible Meat and stuff are things I couldn't get with that stuff. So
I understand.
I personally didn't like any of the textures, so I couldn't wrap my head around all of it.
There is an incredible amount of meat alternatives out there right now. I just got back from Chicago from the National Restaurant Association show out there, and the amount of plant-based meat alternatives that exist now compared to even 4 or 5 years ago is just stunning. Like, this does seem to be a growth category and something us as restaurateurs really need to be aware of on those dietary choices and have those you know, available for our guests as well too.
Right. Tempeh is actually something I really want to get into for some different types of vegetarian burgers coming up. So
I think that's a great idea as well too. We've got a caller in right now. Tia Gloria is on line one. Tia, good morning.
Good morning. Hello, Lindy. How are you?
Good morning, Gloria. How are you?
I'm tolerable. I'd be better if I were eating one of your fabulous burgers.
Thank you.
Really, they are beyond good. They are beyond good. And I thought, oh, let's go. What the heck, you know. I'll live. But where we parked, and people are always so, where are you parked? We parked at the Pennington Street Garage. And you come around, you go east, come around, and it's like half a block that we walked, and you served us. I don't know, do you still have the donuts or not?
We have some donut burgers, but the donuts are no longer there.
Okay, that's good. That's a good thing. too much temptation. But we ate, had a wonderful time. People were visiting with each other from table to table. It was very familiar. And we got back to the Pennington Street Garage, and we had stayed such a short time, we didn't owe anything.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I know. So if anyone's fussing about where to park, just tell them Pennington Street Garage. Piece of cake.
Love it. Thank you for the hot tip, Tia Gloria, on parking downtown for Thunder Bacon Burger. It's not really a problem downtown. And if you've got that Go Tucson app as well, too, for a number of those paid spaces, it is really a breeze, quite frankly, to do that.
Yeah, actually, I mean, there's depending on the day, there's spots out front across the street. There's a, you know, the Pennington Street Garage. There's actually another parking that's over across from John Henry's. There's parking.
No, I find the parking sort of excuse for downtown Tucson to be a little bit overblown, quite frankly. And the parking, if you do have to pay, is quite frankly very reasonable. We're not talking about downtown LA where you're paying $50 or something to park your car for 6 hours. Like, this is, you know, really a buck or two at best. And I think that's money well spent to get an opportunity to enjoy a delicious burger like what you're serving up over at Thunder Bacon, my friend.
Well, I think people just aren't informed. I talk to people all the time. Oh, downtown. It's like, it's not as hard as you think. And actually, everything's a lot closer and it's kind of a neat walk. It's not, everything's where you want to be. It's probably within a half a block or a block. So, and you might find something on the way where you're walking that, oh, wow, I've never seen this place before. So there's a lot down there.
So we got a couple minutes left here in this segment. Tell us, you got any future plans for growth? Is there any other Lindy's or Thunder Bacons out there that might be brewing?
Maybe. we are working. Blueprints are done for the bar in Thunder Bacon. So I know we just did a remodel, but we are coming with a new liquor license and a full bar as well soon, and a little more seating. And we are working on a couple other things. Yes.
Very cryptic answer over here, but it certainly does sound like there's some growth opportunities. So things must be going pretty well.
They're going well. You know, summer's summer. So it's kind of more of a time where I get to be in my office and finalize some things. We do have a Tucson foodie dinner coming up in August that I'm finishing the menu for. And we're exploring late night with Thunder Bacon and got the menu done with that. It's going to be fast. It's going to be easy on your wallet. So we are introducing some street smash burgers that are going to be a lot of fun.
Very cool. We'll have to visit you down there late night as well, too. Give us the shameless plug. Give us the address, website, Instagram handle. What do you got?
So Instagram is Thunder Bacon Burger. Website is thunderbaconburger.com. And we are at 33 North 6th Avenue. So if you think Miss Saigon, their old place, we are just two doors south of it, right across from Ronstadt.
Pretty close. An awesome restaurant experience indeed. And a great visit by a really well-known Tucson restaurant chef over here, Lyndon Riley. Lindy, I really thank you for taking the time to join us today on Jump in Tucson.
I appreciate it. So,
for listeners, don't go anywhere. Tomorrow, we've got Tom Moulton coming up from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. Dr. Ed Ackerley coming up on Friday. I'm going to be filling in Tuesday, the 9th of July, for Ted Maxwell's Engagement Hour. We're going to talk all things tipping, a hot topic indeed in the restaurant business. And so if you've got some grievances, if you've had an iPad flipped over in your face where they just said, there's one little question for you right here, and you're not too happy about it, like, you can come air those grievances with me next Tuesday. We're going to break down both of those ballot initiatives. We're going to talk about tips and how it works for our staff, and, you know, how this is actually a successful model right now with the restaurant industry. And we're going to talk about what's coming up on your ballot in November over here on Jump In Tucson. But we've had a great morning talking about the history of the hamburger. There are many cities that could take claim to that burger, but I think Tucson holds a place not just in my heart, but in your hearts as well, too. It's been a great hour with Chef Lindy on Jump In Tucson. Hang in there, and we've got Dennis Prager coming up after the break. Thanks so much. It's been a wonderful morning with you. Hang in there and jump in.